You're listening to
Fresh Ideas for Teaching.
Hi, everyone. This is Walter. The Fresh Ideas for Teaching podcast is presented by Savvis Learning Company. I'm here with my colleague, Joan Warwick, who is Vice President of Literacy Professional Services on the MyView and My Perspective Solutions for grades K through 12. Joan, who's our special guest today?
Thanks, Walter. I'm honored to have Dr. Sharon Vaughn on the show today to discuss the science of reading. Dr. Vaughn is the Manuel J. Justice Endowed Chair in Education and Executive Director of the Meadows Center for Preventing Educational Risk at the University of Texas at Austin, and is the author of numerous books and research articles that address every reading and social outcome of students with learning difficulties. But more importantly than that, she brings just a wealth of experience and knowledge to this podcast. So we're honored that Dr. Vaughn is an author on MyView Literacy, our newest K-5 solution. Thank you so much, Dr. Vaughn, for speaking with us today.
Wow, thanks for that introduction. Now I got to live up to that, don't I? That's great.
Well, you are definitely considered an expert in the area of literacy intervention and learning difficulties, among many other things. And you're widely respected in the area of reading comprehension. I love the fact that you've led and collaborated on research, a number of studies aimed at improving reading comprehension, and given your extensive knowledge in this area, I just wanted to ask you a few questions today about the science of reading,
sure,
which, you know, has become this hot topic in literacy instruction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure has. I mean, the science of reading, some people are even calling it like SOR, like there is this unit called science of reading. Really, I think the way to think about it is that over the last 30 years, we've learned a lot about what the critical elements are that develop reading, sustain it, enhance it, and allow really literacy to be accessible to all learners. And, you know, not just students who acquire it without a lot of instruction. So, you know, we know that, you know, up to about 40 or 50% of kids learn to read with exposure and support, and they don't require the kind of explicit instruction that the other 50 or 60% of students really require. So when we think of the science of reading, we really think about those components and elements that are part of this evidence-based or this explicit instruction that really is required to make access to literacy available to all learners.
Well, as you've noted, science of reading is not new. It's been around for more than 30 years, you said. In your opinion, why has this term made such a resurgence lately?
Well, I think one way to think about it is the sort of ebb and flow of how we approach reading in, especially not just in the United States, but all English-speaking countries. So the science of reading is not just like a USA thing. If you went to the United Kingdom or Australia or New Zealand or other English-speaking countries, you would find they're still chattering about this same idea. And you ask why, and I think that's really the right question. My sense is that there are a lot of parents and other stakeholders who have children who have not successfully acquired literacy proficiency or have struggled to do it, or maybe even perceive that they haven't been provided the kind of literacy instruction that they need. And these key stakeholders, parents and others, have really rallied schools, educators, and policymakers to say, what about us? We know there's a knowledge base around the science of reading, and we want to make sure that's part of the way our state or our district or our school or our classroom goes about teaching children.
So since there's this movement, and that's really what it is, that is sweeping across the country around literacy instruction that you've already said, you know, impacts 50 to 60% of children who need that explicit instruction. What are those implications for practice in the classroom? What does that explicitness, and I know that's a very loaded and very long question, but what implications for teaching practices do you see with this increased focus on science of reading?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's really important to understand is that we know more about the science of reading, how reading develops, what the elements are that contribute to reading success than we actually know about the science of teaching reading. Now, what I mean by separating those two is that, for example, people often talk about the five big ideas of reading. And when they do that, they're really deriving that information from the 2000 National Reading Panel report that organized the research about reading into these five elements. One of the elements was phonological awareness, specified as largely phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary comprehension. And so people talk about the big five, and they talk about the ways in which these elements should be emphasized based on the age or grade of the student, but also based on the student's learning needs. So, for example, what people might think of as more like the foundation skills in reading, things like, you know, phonemic awareness, and they might think about things like how the sounds of language map to print. So they might wonder about particularly how you blend sounds, like if you hear a sound like you might be able to blend those three sounds and say, oh, I know who that is. That's Sam. But also within phonemic awareness, how you might delete sounds. So the blending and the deleting. So people might say, for example, you know, if I say the name Sam and I ask you to say that without the sound, that would be deleting the sound. What would you get? And it would be am. So these sort of blending and deleting and manipulating sounds is the early stages, the foundations of reading. And you can imagine in a playful way how that might play out in a classroom. And in fact, some of the most fun you can have in the classroom is with around phonological and phonemic awareness. And then gradually building that in a way in which it maps to print. And so we think of that as more like phonics, like how you map those sounds to print and how you organize this sound symbol relationship, often referred to as the alphabetic principle, into classrooms. And you can imagine the vital way that would sort of play out in kindergarten, first and second grade, where students are learning, you know, sort of the phonology and the orthography and how they go together and how they build words. And then how we also teach them to use these practices around, you know, what we might think of as words that don't play fair are some of the high frequency words where this sound symbol relationship isn't represented consistently. You know, words like of. If you think about it, of, O-F, should really be spelled like O-V or U-V, right? Because the sounds that it makes and the letters that it are represented don't go together. It doesn't play fair. So when we have those kind of outlaw words, you know, we have to teach those separately. So we move into other components like fluency, where you learn to read connected text accurately and with expression. So it sort of represents that you have meaning. And of course, we all know vocabulary. You can't get very far in reading if you don't know what the words mean. And I'm actually a pretty good example in Spanish because I read pretty fluently. I can read the words pretty accurately. But because I don't know what a lot of them mean, I kind of have some comprehension problems in Spanish. So we want to be sure vocabulary and word meaning are really stitched in there as an integral part of the of this sort of what how this is manifest in the classroom. And of course, all of this is done in the name of comprehension, the sort of sine qua non of reading. The reason we care is that students can understand, learn from, and appreciate what they read. So in I know that's kind of a long answer to your question, but really these components are how they kind of go together in the classroom. Yeah.
I think it's very interesting what you said, because there's a lot of a school of thought out there that the science of reading pertains solely to that foundational skills, that explicit conscious instruction. And so you've just explained, and you may want to expand upon why that is absolutely not the case.
Yeah. You know what I think is, I think it's a little confusing that when we think about reading, we think about the ultimate goal. And for all of us, whether we're adult readers or middle grade readers or just beginning readers, All of this is about, as I said, understanding what you read. But Joan, the problem, and this is not a small problem, and I think in many ways fuels this debate about the science of reading, is that you can't get there. You can't get to this really rich, beautiful, wonderful world of comprehension if you can't read the words. And that sounds so obvious, but I think we often want to start with the end in mind and, you know, in some cases forget that we have to build the foundation, the structure to get there. And, you know, architecturally speaking, you know, it's sort of a house that will fall or crumble if it doesn't really have that the strength of that foundation. And I'm thinking that some of this debate, Joan, could be about when and how you emphasize these various components.
Yep, that's probably, it sounds perfectly reasonable. Absolutely, if they can't decode the words, they can't say the words, and they can't comprehend the words. But like you said, the ultimate goal is the comprehension. So there's an emphasis also, or there needs to be an emphasis on decoding those words in service of comprehending the text. So quite teaching reading is definitely a complicated process, right?
Absolutely. And we don't get the privilege of teaching one student at a time. We get the privilege of teaching large groups of students who have various needs and are in different places along this continuum of accessing the integration of these components for reading comprehension. And, you know, Joan, I kind of think we would be negligent not to also talk about how these components not only vary based on the needs of students, and those are quite diverse, both within a classroom, a district, and across our country, but to also think about the fact that early on in reading instruction, so like in kindergarten, first and second grade, the text that students read doesn't typically go beyond their background knowledge. So what they know and the vocabulary they have is often adequate for them to understand the text. And where the barrier gets to be is more at the word reading level. And then as students go through the grades, the background knowledge required to read this increasingly complex and dense text that focuses on things like, you know, history and science and even the fiction that becomes more complex. You know, what's required there, Joan, is just, it's just often beyond the vocabulary and background knowledge of students. And therefore, this sort of weight between what gets emphasized shifts. And I think because of that, there's this feeling that at the younger grades, that students may not be given the kind of word reading knowledge, the acumen, the tools to read these words, so that they kind of start falling apart as they get into the older grades. So I know I've heard that argument, and I've witnessed it too, Joan.
So switching gears for just a minute, and maybe this is connected to what you just said about the variety of students in the classroom and the teachers. You've described an accordion of needs in the classroom, both by the students and the teacher. Can you speak to this or make connections to what we've just talked about, to that accordion of needs?
Yeah. And, you know, it's sort of an easy thing to talk about. It's a perhaps harder thing to imagine. And it's an even harder thing to teach when you think about the range of needs. So, you know, it's possible, Joan, like if you're a first grade teacher, it's possible that in your classroom, and let's just take 24 as the number of kids you have, it's possible that like 25% of those kids are reading above the second grade level. It's possible that 25% of those kids don't know all of their letters and don't know them fluently, much less their sounds. And it's possible some of them read maybe 100 high frequency words reasonably well, but most of them don't. So when you kind of think about that, and then let's layer on the complexity of some of the students in your class having a home language other than English, and you want to advantage, you know, enrich your classroom instruction with what they know about another language and sort of integrate and weave that into your instruction. And then you get to think about the fact that you may have a student with special needs in your class who requires your adaptations and accommodations to appropriately instruct. And so this sort of accordion starts really widening so that the lens you need as a teacher requires variation in instructional practices, variation in the level of words, but also an understanding of how these foundation skills around phonemic awareness and phonics need to be made a little more difficult and a little easier based on all of these learners. So it is a daunting task, and I sure like talking about it more than I can imagine doing it.
Right. Right, absolutely. The ability to differentiate and meet all of those needs has got to be, you know, I was a teacher for a long time, and I certainly can appreciate what they try to do every single day with what they have.
Yeah. I kind of liken it, Joe, to being a grandparent, which is that, like, I used to teach, I was a classroom teacher. And honestly, it's a lot better where I'm at now. I might even work more. It's possible I do, but I'll tell you, I don't work harder. So yeah, it's a very challenging job. But I think it's a job, Joan, that if we think about the science of reading as sharpening our tools and enriching what we know, and if we think about the science of reading as something we need to learn more about and acquire more proficiency in, so that we become professionals that are very knowledgeable and well thought of because we know the science of our discipline. I think it can be kind of exciting. I don't think we have to position this as some people are in favor and some people are against. I think we can position this as an opportunity to sort of enrich and enable all of us to become more proficient.
I like what you said about all the different needs and pedagogies and classroom approaches and you know, the fact that people are practitioners. Because there's an assertion out there that the science of reading and maybe a balanced literacy or a workshop approach to teaching reading are mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the science of reading tells you how to organize your classroom. I don't think the science of reading tells you which of those approaches you can enact in a way that represents that science of reading. I think what the science of reading does is it tells you that we know about how to implement explicit practices around these components of reading, and that there's ways to make them more difficult or easy for the range of learners in our classroom. And the more we know about that, the more responsibly we can perform. But even more importantly, the more likely we are to support that range of learners, so that, like, by the time they're in the older grades, they can look back and say, you know, I am so glad that I had Joan as my teacher, because Miss Warwick really taught me everything I need to know. And now I'm really a very good reader and I enjoy reading.
And that is definitely the goal for all of us.
Yeah.
Right. For all, as parents, as teachers, even as students, that is definitely the ultimate goal. Just one more question before we wrap up today. I'd love to hear your final thoughts on what long-term impact do you hope this focus on the science of reading has on literacy instruction?
Well, I would say that my hope is that all professionals who are involved in reading, whether they're teachers or researchers, whether they are in teacher preparation or whether they're in publication or materials development or curriculum development, that they say, what a great opportunity for us to really understand what we know about our profession, what we know about the scientific practices, the scientific knowledge that enables us to weave together the best set of practices and programs and approaches possible. And that we use that as an opportunity to really consider ourselves a scientific profession that relies on knowledge to inform us. Now, there's a lot we don't know, John. We don't know everything, but we know a lot, and we ought to take advantage of what we know.
Well, and I love the idea that, you know, we know more now than we knew. And as we know better, we just implement and do better for that ultimate goal that you already mentioned. I really appreciate your time today and you sharing your wealth of knowledge and experience around this particular topic, the science of reading. It's certainly a hot one that we will have to talk about.
Yeah, it is. And I appreciate, Joan, you inviting me to do this. And hello to all the people out there. I hope some of this is useful to you.
All right, Walter, we're going to send it back to you.
That's all the time we have for today. Many thanks to both Dr. Sharon Vaughn and Joan Warwick for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Fresh Ideas for Teaching podcast. Until next time. This podcast is presented by Savvis Learning Company, a next-generation learning company providing award-winning solutions for grades pre-K through 12. Visit savvis.com today. Learn with us.